This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and hello to all you heathens and freethinkers.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood heathen and freethinker. This is the March 16th, 2013 broadcast of Free Thought Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in Missouri, in New York, in Michigan, and in California.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, that stands for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and our two purposes are to educate about non-theism and to keep religion out of government. And we have over 19,000 members in North America, and we hope today you will join us.
Today we're going to talk with Jim McCollum, who, when he was growing up in the 1940s, was the little boy at the center of a legal storm that produced the most important Supreme Court decision about separating religion and government in legal history. It's called the McCollum decision.
Jim grew up, perhaps not surprisingly, to become an attorney. And today, although he is semi-retired, he's still teaching constitutional law, so that's very appropriate. And we'll talk with him on the second half of Free Thought Radio. But we also want to play some interviews of Vashti McCollum. That's his mother, who brought McCollum versus Board of Education. And she died in 2006, but at the age of 93. But her words and her work live on, and that's the only kind of immortality any of us are going to have. But we consider Vashti a true immortal when it comes to the Establishment Clause law and dedication to that constitutional principle.
And the reason we're talking about this case this month is that the McCollum decision was issued by the U.S. Supreme Court on March the 8th, 1948. So that makes it the 65th anniversary that we just passed. And we'll talk a little more about that in a few minutes.
And there is another legal anniversary coming up, and one a bit closer to home here in Madison, Wisconsin, than the McCollum case, which came out of Champaign, Illinois. And that is a historic ruling by the Wisconsin State Supreme Court on March 18th, 1980. And they call it the Edgerton case. I have a brother and sister-in-law and niece who live in Edgerton now. And this was the Weiss decision, and it was taken not by atheists, not by agnostics, but by a Roman Catholic family who were fed up that their child was being indoctrinated with the Protestant Bible, Bible reading and prayers based on the Protestant Bible in the Edgerton public schools, and brought suit and won back in March 18th, 1890.
That was the decision, yeah. So that we can thank Roman Catholics for taking Bible reading out of Wisconsin schools.
Right. They were certainly pro-state church separation as minorities. And there was a decision, but the most eloquent part of it was a concurrence by Justice H.S. Orton. And I thought, Dan, you could read that quote.
Orton, is that Orton Park in Madison?
I don't know.
I think it is. The quote, part of the quote from that decision is this: "There is no such source and cause of strife, quarrel, fights, malignant opposition, persecution, and war, and all evil in the state as religion. Let it once enter our civil affairs, our government would soon be destroyed. Let it once enter our common schools, they would be destroyed. Those who made our Constitution saw this and used the most apt and comprehensive language in it to prevent such a catastrophe."
So the McCollum decision was very important federally as the first major Supreme Court decision about keeping religion out of government. But at the state level, state court level, this goes way, way back. That was 1890, those words, from the Weiss decision.
So these are really some important legal anniversaries to observe this month.
And before we go into more detail on that McCollum case, Dan, you just came back from some trips.
I just came back from a number. I did a debate in Windsor, Ontario on Is There Life After Death with a Canadian pastor named Joe Boot. And I think by now the video of that debate should be online. You can find it at our website. They just told me that it was just up. And then I came back for the Freethought Festival here in Madison, Wisconsin, which was last week. And we talked about it last week, where the AHA, Atheists, Humanists, and Agnostics, the campus group at the University of Wisconsin, put on this huge weekend of Freethought Festival, including an atheist pride parade down State Street in the rain, which didn't dampen anybody's enthusiasm. They all paraded up with the big signs, and more than 100 people. At the steps of the Capitol, we had a lot of speeches, and it was quite a good rally with some media coverage. And then I flew right back to Michigan for three events. I was in Mount Pleasant at Central Michigan University. I was at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and then in Alma, a little college called Alma College in a little town called Alma, Michigan, meeting some really fascinating, smart, and activist young students who are fighting to promote reason and human values and free thought.
And I just came back from Allendale, Michigan. Our trips didn't coincide, but speaking to the secular students there. Now, I also, last week, participated in something else.
Well, we want to set the scene a little. Before we talk in the second half of the show with Jim McCollum, you went down to that town where the case took place, Champaign, Illinois, and tell us why you went down there last week.
Well, it was to celebrate the 65th anniversary of the McCollum decision issued by the U.S. Supreme Court on March 8th, 1948, and the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana put on this celebration. It was under the leadership of Professor Jay Rosenstein, and we've had Jay on our show. Jay was the director of the Peabody Award-winning documentary about this landmark case called The Lord Is Not on Trial Here Today. And so they screened, very appropriately, his film that just came out in 2010. And then they had a panel. And I was, he very kindly invited me to be a representative of FFRF.
And what did you say on that?
Well, I wanted to say that first, Rosenstein's documentary does capture, you know, the words, the history, the drama, and the scope of this decision. He talked to everybody. He talked to Vashti in her last year of life. It's very, of course, very well done. It won a Peabody, and it is streaming only for the next week or so, half week, live, or it's streaming from BillMoyers.com. Bill Moyers did make a little reference to this Peabody Award-winning film last week in honor of the 65th anniversary. So
the
if you've
Lord
not,
is not on trial.
Seen this, it's been airing on PBS periodically. You can go to BillMoyers.com, and we hope that it'll be airing at our next convention. We'll have more details on that. So I was on this panel, and you asked me, what did I say? Huh. Well, I said that we don't pray at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, but not one workday ever goes by that at FFRF we fail to give thanks to the McCollum family and the McCollum decision, because this decision endures, it protects school children and personal conscience throughout the land, and it's the decision on which rests all other Supreme Court rulings and precedent against religious encroachment and devotion in the public schools. And actually, the whole Establishment Clause law itself is based on the McCollum decision.
Well, for example, we invoked the McCollum decision in our case, Doe versus Porter, FFRF's 2004 victory in the Sixth Circuit, which nixed devotional instruction taught by Bible students entering into public schools in Dayton, Tennessee.
And we should explain that that's what the McCollum decision was about. It was about religious instruction during the school day in the schools that caused so much trouble for Jim McCollum. And in the face of bitter defeat in two lower courts and social shunning and hate mail and reprisal against herself and her family and her children, Vashti McCollum did not give up. And one of the great privileges, you know, you probably feel the same way, Dan, as an FFRF co-founder and being part of FFRF, has been meeting and working with so many of these champions of the First Amendment. And to ready myself for the panel, I reread Vashti's memoir, One Woman's Fight, which FFRF has reprinted. We read the McCollum decision that's in the epilogue of the book. And now we did do ourselves a film in the late 1980s. It's not, doesn't tell the whole story like Jay Rosenstein's, but...
But we let's play a little bit. We love to hear Vashti's voice. Here's just a couple of clips from the film that we produced back in the 1980s. It's called Champions of the First Amendment. And you can find this film in total at FFRF's YouTube channel, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, or just Google Champions of the First Amendment.
We have three sons. When the oldest one was in the fourth grade, he ran into this program of religious education in the school, public school, on school time. He came home with a note from the teacher that we were supposed to sign, give him permission to participate. We didn't approve of it. We thought that it was religious indoctrination, was the sort of thing that shouldn't be in public schools. And also, we didn't want the religious training in any case. So we kept him out of the class until the peer pressure became so great. Even the public school teacher called and asked that we permit him to participate. Finally, we let him take the course for a few weeks. And we saw that it was pure and simple religious indoctrination. It wasn't a course in general morality and good, wholesome, happy living. And so we took him out of the course. The pressure continued, and when it came to the point that we couldn't resist it, I took it to court.
We'll talk with Jim himself in a few minutes, but let's listen to Vashti, his mother's, concluding remarks from that film, Champions of the First Amendment.
Well, there will be many more cases in the courts, and they will end up in the United States Supreme Court, I'm sure. I just hope that the decision in the McCollum case, which in the past has been the precedent, will prevail. Because if we have prayer in the public schools, whose prayer? And if we have tax credits for the families sending children to parochial schools, that money siphoned off the educational program, I see nothing but great harm to the public schools. Not only that, but I think that more and more the parents will elect to send their children to the more exclusive schools, which will be the religious schools. The children that can't make it will be, quote, dumped in the public school system. And you will no longer have the melting pot that we had that was so valuable in the United States, the service of the public schools. So I see nothing but disaster for the public school system if we have these practices prevailing. And I think that people will see this, will challenge it in the courts, and I hope that the McCollum case will prevail.
We will talk more about the McCollum case after the break. And as you're listening to a little bit of Sondheim's music, the Overture from Follies, we'll talk a little bit about Stephen Sondheim, whose birthday is coming up next week. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gillar, and we'll be talking with Jim McCollum and talking more about this very important legal battle, and with a little break for music in the second segment.
Playgoers, I bid you welcome. The theater is a temple, and we are here to worship the gods of comedy. Something familiar, something peculiar, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something appealing, something appalling, something for everyone, a comedy tonight.
Nothing with gods, nothing with fate.
Weighty affairs will just have to wait.
Nothing that's formal,
nothing that's normal.
No recitations to recite.
Open up the curtain. Comedy tonight.
Nothing with gods, nothing with fate. Of course, that's Stephen Sondheim from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. The song is called Comedy Tonight. And Stephen Sondheim is a non-believer. He's one of those people who had to come out of two different closets. And you'll hear a little bit more of Sondheim's music. His birthday is this week. It is March the 22nd, March the 25th. And he was born in
1930, Dan. I have March 22nd. Where do you get March 25th? Well, check our free thought of the day at ffrf.org.
Yeah, my paper notes are all switched around. But anyway, yes. And so happy birthday, Stephen Sondheim.
And because we're celebrating the 65th anniversary of the McCollum decision, let's play Dan's Battle of Church and State.
We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, over the wall come a tumbling down. I've heard about your hero, Joshua, but his accomplishments are not so great, because there's none like Thomas Jefferson and the wall between church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, or the wall will come a-tumbling down. Some say that the wall between church and state is just a bad metaphor. But if unbelievers can't be protected from the rest, then what is the Bill of Rights for? We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, or the wall will come a-tumbling down. Shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, or the wall will come a-tumbling down. We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, or the wall will come a-tumbling.
So that should make you smile. That's Dan Barker's The Battle of Church and State. Dan, you rewrote, of course, the famous
Battle of Jericho.
Battle of Jericho.
And by the way, that
very
phrase,
tongue-in-cheek.
That phrase about the bad metaphor was actually what Chief Justice Rehnquist called the separation of church and state.
And I think he was still Chief Justice when
At
you
the
wrote
time,
this.
Yeah, that's right.
And then sometimes you change the words if we're honoring victors, court
yeah.
victors, but so it's a...
Yeah,
flexible song.
There's none like Vashti McCollum yeah, and the wall and between church
that's
and state.
That's from Friendly Neighborhood Atheist, which is a 34-song, 2-CD musical that you can order from ffrf.org/shop. And we are celebrating the McCollum decision. We are going to be speaking with a prime source, Jim McCollum, who was the little boy in the eye of that legal storm, grown up to be a champion of the First Amendment, to continue his activism. And so I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Of course, here's some Stephen Sondheim. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us from Arkansas, Jim McCollum, who, if you heard the first two segments of our show, you know he was the little boy that was part of the McCollum decision back in the 1940s. He's all grown up now. And Jim, you're an attorney. And
yes.
Teacher and
retired
and teaching, but you are teaching constitutional law.
Yes, and administrative law.
So
and
that
I'm an adjunct professor at Southern Arkansas University.
So you know something about constitutional law, don't you, firsthand?
Well, it's changed an awful lot since I took the course in law school, I'll say that.
I was just thinking, this year, this month, is the 65th anniversary of the McCollum decision, and who would have thought? But unlike you, Jim, the McCollum decision is not retiring. It is living on, and we are invoking it in many of the cases that we take. So we want to thank you. You know, we can give thanks as atheists and agnostics. We can give thanks unto the McCollum family.
And we didn't. I didn't see you. I was down in Champaign a week ago, Thursday, for the celebration on March 7th that the university put on, and I saw your brother Dan.
Yes, I'm sorry I had to miss that, but duties down here pretty much preempted my coming up.
Well, we missed you, but Dan made a few remarks, and of course he's the three-time mayor. He's also retired, but he was mayor of Champaign, which is also a really nice ending to the McCollum story. You going into law and him becoming mayor of a town that was kind of hard on your family.
Well, from persona non grata, it was interesting that he eventually became the mayor and the longest sitting mayor up to that point.
Now, we just played a little bit earlier on the show from Champions of the First Amendment, where we had interviewed your mother, Vashti, and you. We played a little bit of her talking about the case, but for someone who's just tuning in, do you want to talk about what happened when you were, how old were you when that started?
11 years old.
So why don't we go back to the beginning of that?
Well, I'll try. I'm 78 now, so a lot of that has disappeared into the smoke of the past, I guess.
Well, you teased your mother to get into a religious instruction in the schools, and I think that's how it all started. You were, what, the only kid in the class who wasn't taking religious instruction?
Well, the teacher put a lot of pressure on both my mother and myself to take the course. Frankly, I wanted to see what it was all about. So I had a major curiosity as to what was going on in the class. The material was really, I was in fourth grade at the time, and the material really was kindergarten-level material. And by the end of the year, I had no interest in pursuing it again.
And who were the teachers of the class?
The teacher that they had at Southside School was a lady who had been a missionary in China and got bounced out because of the revolution.
And she was not a school employee, right? She was an outsider.
That's right. She was. They had two of them. And I never met the other one, but they were not employees of the school district.
And then if you were a Catholic kid, then you would have gotten instruction from, what, a priest or somebody representing the Catholics?
I think the Catholics had some sort of a program, but not at the school I was at, because the school wasn't, well, there weren't that many Catholics in Champaign at the time.
So when you didn't sign up for it the next year, I think you changed schools, you started to get into, well, it was very unpleasant for you, wasn't it?
Well, particularly when I went to a different grade school. We were right on the edge of a catchment area of two grade schools. And for some reason, for my fifth grade year, I went to this other school. The demographics of the other school was quite different than the South Side school. And consequently, I ran into much more aggravation at that fifth grade school.
Well, and in this film, the Peabody Award-winning film, The Lord Is Not on Trial Here Today, that Jay Rosenstein directed, which you can view for a few more days free at BillMoyers.com, by the way. It's up on his website. That goes into a great deal of detail about what happened to you. Your shoes were stolen after you were swimming at the Y, and you had to walk home barefoot in the snow, and oh, you know, the Halloween incidents, your mother getting, what, coated with trash, the kitty disappearing. It escalated a great deal after the lawsuit was filed, didn't it?
Yes, very much so. And it was filed during the summer prior to my sixth grade year.
I wanted to ask you, Jim, the regular teachers in your school, what did they do during that hour? I think it was a one-hour-a-week thing. Did they just leave the class, or did they stay there and supervise, or what?
I think they took a break, a coffee break, because I don't remember being in the class at all.
So you were left alone with these non-accredited outsiders teaching religion in the public schools.
Well, and then go ahead.
That was basically it.
But then when you didn't sign up, what happened?
Well, not an awful lot in my fourth grade year, except for the fact that the teacher put a lot of pressure on me and on my parents to sign me up. But in the fifth grade year, it was just pure hostility.
Well, you were put in a place where kids typically were put for detention, right?
Well, they had a desk in the hall where they put people who did bad things.
So there you were. And that's what really, well, what happened, I think, is you came home and you told your mother, I'm not going to go back to school the day that they have religious instruction. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it pretty much hit the fan when Mom heard about it. And I guess she got in touch with the school principal. And so after that, I was put in the music room. And the music room actually was the teacher's lounge as well.
And so the teachers would be making remarks, thinking that you were there for punishment.
I don't remember any remarks one way or another, but it was kind of embarrassing to be in there and have teachers come through. The teacher's John was off of that room, so that's where they would go.
Well, you must have been a bad little boy, sitting there not wanting to partake of the lessons from the good book, all the moral teachings of Christianity in the Bible, and you bad little boy turning your back on all that. That must have been kind of the image that it was, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know. The classes that they had were just typical biblical stories, laundered in such a way that they would be attractive to young kids. There was not any real biblical insight or anything in connection with those classes.
Well, the image go ahead.
So the only thing that is, as far as I was concerned, is that I was outed as an atheist, and that seemed to raise the hackles of a lot of folks.
And so I kind of have the image of your mother as the mama bear, and her baby cub was threatened. She really went into action and found support to go to court. And then, you know, things did not get any better for your family, though.
Well, Mom never looked for trouble, but she didn't want to mess with her family either. She heard that the Unitarian minister in Champaign-Urbana had delivered a sermon on the subject and consequently got in touch with him. And he was the one that found this Jewish businessman's group in Chicago that was willing to support the case and provide the attorney.
So, you know, maybe without going into all the legal details, you know, this was filed, and I know it must have been crushing. You testified at the trial. That must have been scary.
Well, no, it wasn't. As a matter of fact, it was fun. I was really looking forward to it. The chair, the witness chair, was a swivel chair. And I must admit, I must have driven the judge and the attorneys kind of bonkers, because I like to swivel around in that chair. But my crowning achievement was when the school board attorney asked me if my mother and our attorney had told me what to say. And I said yes. And the school board attorney figured he had a real wedge on that one at this point. So he says, "What did they tell you to say?" And I said, "They told me to tell the truth." And that was kind of the end of that line of questioning.
Well, the truth is the truth. What can, you can't go wrong with that. Tell what happened.
So, well, I know that it was lost at that level, and then the appeal was lost, and your mother, well, she changed attorneys and went up to the Supreme Court. And but before that happened, you ended up leaving Champaign.
Well, yes. I was in junior high school at that point, and things were intolerable enough that I really couldn't pay attention to what I needed to in school. So they sent me out to live with my grandparents in Rochester, New York, and I went to a private school there, which was peopled largely with Jewish kids, and so consequently it was a friendly environment.
Was that your Cromwell grandfather?
Yes.
Yeah, Arthur Cromwell.
Yeah, he had written some pro-atheist literature apparently back then as well, right?
Well, he was an avid reader. He and his wife never went to college, but they were avid readers, and they had an astoundingly large library. And unlike a lot of folks, including myself, they had read every one of their books. Art would read Spinoza and Thomas Paine and Robert Ingersoll and a bunch of others. He'd raised Presbyterian. And then he read the Bible, and that convinced him to be an atheist. Hmm.
So while this was going, I mean, that must have been quite a wrench, except you were very grateful to be sent away from home at that point.
Yes, very much so.
Your mother made a point in this documentary that, you know, what did that, how telling that was, that a boy of your age was grateful to be sent away from home because it was so bad at school.
Well, I was living with family, and I've never had separation anxieties that I can remember. So to me, it was just another adventure and a welcome one at that.
Now, we have to say before we go to the break that your mother won this decision 8-1, March 8th, 1948. What a great day that must have been for you.
It was.
And we'll come back. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll come back after this break, and we'll take up where we left off and kind of find out what it was like going to law school when you had made law. I'm Annie Laurie Geller.
I'm Dan Barker. And Jim, I saw a really good joke on the internet I want to tell you when we come back, because I know you like to give us jokes. So we'll be right back. Annie Laurie Geller and Dan Barker, and this is Free Thought Radio. Thank you.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie, and we are talking with Jim McCollum, a champion of the First Amendment, because we have just passed the 65th anniversary of the McCollum versus Board of Education case by the Supreme Court, one of the most, well, the most important Establishment Clause case ever.
So, Jim, before we get back to your case, you're always sending us jokes. And in fact, I've used some of them on our radio show, and you have quite a sense of humor there. But I wonder if you saw the one that was on the internet just this last week. You know, we have a new pope now. Everybody's celebrating. But there was a cartoon on the internet where it was talking about Ratzinger, who decided to quit. And Jesus is hanging on the cross with his arms stretched out, nailed to the wood. And Jesus looks up and says, "Wait, we can quit?"
I like that one.
I finally gave you one to laugh at. So,
well, so Jim, we left off where you and your mother had won an 8-1 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. Did you go right back home at that point, or did you stay on in Rochester?
I finished the year, the school year in Rochester, before I came home.
And then did everything kind of die down in Champaign?
Well, pretty much, because I was in ninth grade by that time, and I went to the University of Illinois Laboratory School, which is pretty much of a high school operation. And the demographics there, of course, was quite a bit different. Most of those kids were college professors' children.
So, but the whole town, I mean, you must have been very conscious everywhere you went. It was such a big issue in Champaign. So is that what propelled you to go to law school, being part of this lawsuit?
No, the reason why I was interested in law school is when I was in the Army at Fort Leonard Wood, junior officers would be tapped for court-martial boards, special court-martial boards, and for defense and prosecuting attorneys. And I got a bit of experience there, and it began to interest me. Actually, my brother Dan was the one that was slated to go to law school, and he spent a year there and decided it wasn't for him. But in my case, it intrigued my interest, and so consequently, when I was discharged from the Army from active duty in 78, I decided that it's time to go to law school.
Wait, I thought there were no atheists in foxholes. How could you serve our country if you don't believe in a higher power?
Well, I did my best.
Now, there was a point where you must have encountered a law professor who said, "Wait a minute, are you the McCollum of McCollum versus Board of Education?"
They knew.
They knew who you were.
The professor who taught constitutional law had been a classmate of my mother's when she for the 1 year that she was in law school.
So
Dr. Sullivan knew who I was.
But you didn't get any special favors, did you? You had to,
no,
you still had to
all.
Do all the work.
Now, you are going to be speaking at the 36th Annual Convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the last weekend in September here in Madison, Wisconsin. And so we don't want to give away everything you're going to talk about, but I know you follow these state church issues very avidly. And you said something to me on the phone that one of your big concerns is religion in the military.
Well, yes, of course, the military has all kinds of problems with respect to civil rights, both religion. As a matter of fact, there's a big issue now about a lieutenant general who threw out a conviction against a junior field officer who had been convicted of rape in a court-martial trial. And so And of course, there are a couple of organizations that are specifically interested in religious abuses in the military. It's an interesting subject.
Well, I think we only have a
couple minutes left.
But Jim, in a minute or so, could you wrap up the importance of the McCollum decision?
Well, it was the first case of impression that held the states accountable to the Establishment of Religion Clause through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. It also established the fact that a taxpayer has standing to sue. And if you don't have standing to sue, you don't get into court.
So your mother filed as taxpayer standing. It wasn't just that you were a student in the school as well, but as a taxpayer.
Well, she was a taxpayer for the school district.
And Jim, all the other cases, this is the first real case. All the other cases rest on an establishment clause, isn't that right?
Pretty much.
So it's incredibly important, and as we've said, we invoke it every day at FFRF in the letters that we write and the work we do. So thank you so much for winning that case.
And well, I have to give credit to my mother. I was
yes,
along for the ride.
That's
right. I must admit, it was a heck of a ride.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Jim McCollum of McCollum versus Board of Education, 1948. Thank you, Dave McCann, for producing and engineering the show, and Buzz Kemper for announcing. The show is recorded and produced in Madison, Wisconsin. FFRF.org/radio will tell you more.
And sign up at FFRF.org. You can also phone 1-800-335-4021. You can get a sample copy of the March issue of Free Thought today if you like, or just join and then you'll get 10 issues a year in the mail, or a PDF file if you prefer. So support us. We'll be back next week with Catherine Stewart talking about the bad news about the Good News Club. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday